Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting President Trump is heading home from the G7 summit. Before leaving, he told U.S. troops at a naval air station in Italy the military has his full support. Mr. Trump also spoke about funding for NATO.
The U.S. is currently paying much more than any other nation, and that is not fair to the United States or the United States taxpayer. So we're working on it, and I will tell you, a big difference over the last year. Money is actually starting to pour into NATO from countries that would not have been doing what they're doing now had I not been elected. I can tell you that.
Meantime, six other nations of the Group of Seven agreed to affirm their commitment to the Paris Climate Agreement as they await President Trump's decision on the accord. President Trump said in a tweet Saturday he will make a decision next week on the Paris Climate Agreement, which calls for cutting greenhouse gas emissions. President Obama signed the agreement 2 years ago, but Trump has not supported the accord publicly. The White House is not commenting on a Washington Post report that Jared Kushner, President Trump's son-in-law and top advisor, discussed with Russia's ambassador to Washington the possibility of setting up a secret communications channel between the Trump transition team and the Kremlin. Without speaking about Kushner, the U.S. National Security Advisor, H.R. McMaster, said Saturday that so-called back-channeling was normal. Mr. Trump has repeatedly denied any collusion between his campaign team and Russia. For details on much more news, we invite you to join us at our website. That is voanews.com. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. Prime Minister Theresa May of Britain says the country has lowered its security threat level Saturday to severe as police continue to make progress investigating the suicide bomb attack in Manchester.
A significant amount of police activity has taken place over the last 24 hours, and there are now 11 suspects in custody. In the light of these developments, JTAC, the Independent Joint Terrorism Analysis Centre, has this morning taken the decision to reduce the threat level from critical to severe. The public should be clear about what this means. A threat level of severe means an attack is highly likely. The country should remain vigilant.
The suicide attacker, Salman Abidi, blew himself up in the lobby of the Manchester Arena Monday, killing 22 people, wounding at least 116 others. The United States is sending a third aircraft carrier strike force to the Western Pacific region in an apparent warning to North Korea to deter its ballistic missile and nuclear programs. Sources tell VOA the USS Nimitz, one of the world's largest warships, will join the two other supercarriers. North Korea's growing nuclear and missile threat is seen as a major security challenge for President Trump, who has vowed to prevent the country from being able to strike the United States with a nuclear missile, a capability experts say Pyongyang could have sometime after 2020. A suicide car bomber has struck a convoy of government forces in eastern Afghanistan, killing at least 18 and wounding six others. Officials said that Saturday's attack in the eastern city of Khos targeted a special unit of Afghan forces providing security for U.S. troops in the area. The Taliban is claiming responsibility for the attack, but denies there were any civilian casualties. The terminals at London's two main airports are packed with frustrated passengers as British Airways officials try to fix a global computer failure that forced the carrier to cancel all flights from the transportation hubs. The airline canceled flights Saturday at Heathrow and Gatwick airports shortly after the failure. British Airways has not said what caused the glitch, but said there is no evidence pointing to a cyber attack. Sri Lanka is appealing to the United Nations and the international community for help as it struggles with the floods and mudslides that have killed 100 people so far. Officials say about another 100 people are missing. Many of the thousands displaced by the floods and landslides are staying in evacuation centers. And South Korea say a fishing vessel believed to have been hijacked by pirates in the Indian Ocean was not hijacked after all. Authorities are still sorting out exactly what happened. For more news, please join us at voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown, reporting here in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Impuga. Peter Clote has the day off.
Whatever the source of your money, we don't know, but we welcome those who want to deposit money. Why then do you discourage the person by asking, where is your source of income from?
Experts gather in Yaounde, Cameroon to find solutions to Africa's illicit financial flows.
Briefly, this coalition of the fearless is a coalition of groups and organizations that have been disenchanted over time, disillusioned.
A Ugandan group says it has taken up arms against the government of Yoweri Museveni.
It was considered to be a traffic offense, and the best that could have happened was just to give him a fine for a traffic offense. But the traffic offense has been converted into a treason case.
And in Zambia, an opposition leader faces treason charges over an incident in which his convoy refused to yield to the president's motorcade. Those stories and more coming up right here on Nightline Africa. The 43rd G7 summit concluded Saturday in Sicily, Italy. During the two-day summit, world leaders discussed, among other things, trade, climate change, immigration, and ties to Africa. VOA's Josephine McKenna was at the summit, where I reached her a short while ago. Josephine, what were the highlights of this summit?
Well, so much about this G7 was really about the first G7 for the US President Donald Trump, and the G7 leaders from the other countries were quite nervous, I think, about how to deal with him. Because he can be so unpredictable. And the fact that they were unable to reach a united stance on climate change, President Trump was unwilling to endorse the climate accord it reached in Paris, was very significant and embarrassing, I think, for these leaders. They did manage to take a very strong stand on terrorism, particularly with the visit yesterday from the British Prime Minister Theresa May, and the leaders felt very strongly about putting more pressure on social media and internet companies to really do something to intervene when there is jihadist propaganda on the internet before this starts to spread and create more terrorists in the future. And as Theresa May said, the fight against terrorism is moving from the battlefront, the battleground, to the internet. And that was something that they felt very strongly about. But really, they were looking for, before this conference, the Italian Prime Minister was looking for more agreement on migration, a compassionate tone, a more united response from the leaders. And that was not possible either because President Trump refused to endorse any kind of compassionate tone or welcoming approach to people seeking asylum.
Climate change and terrorism featured a lot, and immigration in the summit. And African leaders were represented by, among others, Kenyan President Kenyatta. How was Africa addressed in this summit?
Well, I think this was a very important element of the summit, and Italy in particular feels that Sicily is at the crossroads of the Mediterranean, really this point here halfway between Europe and Africa, the Middle East, and Africa's security, stability and sustainable development are said to be high priorities in the final declaration from this G7. And it seems like these leaders, I know we've heard it before, but it seems this time these leaders really do feel strongly, particularly Germany, Italy and France, about strengthening cooperation, really doing something about working with the African Union agenda, investing in infrastructure, education. And I think President Emmanuel Macron expressed it very well in his press conference, where he said climate change really is driving poverty, insecurity, economic hardship in Africa, and forcing many people to leave their home countries to seek a better life. And he said we must address these problems. We must address climate change. He talked about the drought around Lake Chad in particular. These things are very important and obviously all linked. And I think that's why it was critical to have the African leaders face to face with the European leaders trying to find common solutions to these big problems.
Climate change featured a lot, as you say, but it appears the United States president wasn't quite on the same page.
And that was embarrassing for the leaders. Both the Italian Prime Minister, Paolo Gentiloni, who's hosting the conference, and the French President, Emmanuel Macron, in their press conferences, he's gone away to think about it. We're expecting a decision in a few weeks' time, perhaps. Well, as they're saying that, President Trump was tweeting, "I will make a decision on whether to endorse the Paris Climate Change next week." And so that just tells you he's running his own race. He's doing what he wants. He didn't seem to want to endorse many of the things that they were pushing at this G7. And the German Chancellor Angela Merkel, for example, described the whole thing as completely unsatisfactory. So I think the leaders were trying to play down their differences today, but it certainly seemed that President Trump did not want to take a global approach and focus on some of these big problems and big issues that are affecting both African countries and Europe together.
That was Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Sicily, Italy. A Ugandan group has said it has taken up arms to fight the government of Yoweri Museveni. The group, calling itself the Super Coalition of the Fearless, accuses the Museveni regime, which has been in power since January 1986, of allegedly committing heinous crimes against Ugandans. It cites pervasive corruption, discrimination, and tribalism. Joel Wakaima is the group's spokesperson. I reached him in the Dutch capital, The Hague, by phone to find out more about this group.
Briefly, the Super Coalition of the Fearless is a coalition of groups and organizations that have been disenchanted over time, disillusioned. They feel shortchanged by the system of President Museveni, which never changes anything in the country apart from lies and deceptions, and murders and mass graves. So they came together after waiting for very long, 31 years, and decided that we have to fight back like human beings.
As you say, it has been over 30 years of Museveni's reign. Why now? Why decide to take up what you want to do right now?
The Ugandans are always very tolerant people. Because of our tolerance, we have always thought that if we continue trying other means, the system will bend and listen to the voice of common sense. Unfortunately, that one has not happened for 30 or more years now. We tried to demonstrate, we tried to write petitions to the people in power, asking them to listen to the population. They failed. We put across very serious research arguments, like the arguments contained in the very respected DOC report, which was talking about serious governance issues, where almost 5% of Ugandans wanted the system of governance to change from the decentralization system to something else, or like a federal system of governance, like what is espoused in other democracies. But still, the system did not listen. The purpose of that argument, national argument, was to try and decrease the powers from one man. So it failed. The government did not listen to the people. From there, we have waited for democracy to twice lack. We have participated in democracy, in elections, election after election. But still, every election has been bungled. Every election has been stolen. The only option remaining was to pick up arms and fight the dictatorship. There's nothing more we can do. We made a very sober assessment of the consequences, of the counter-consequences, of the repercussions. But it's our turn to take up arms and kick out the despots and return the country to the rightful owners.
And when do you intend to do that?
We have already started, for information. We have been recruiting and we continue to recruit. We are charging up the population through our distribution of anonymous letters. You know, the propaganda is part and parcel of any war situation. That's why we are
circulating anonymous letters door to door, sub-county to sub-county, village to village, so that the population can completely do away with the system, with the government led by Mr. Yoweri Museveni.
What's the strength of your members or the forces, for that matter?
You know, it depends on which district you would like to measure our strength. But if we have the people, and then that is a very, 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 very big volume of strength. We have the population, we have the zeal, we have the courage and the bravery to take on that system, because they cannot run away from us. We know them, they have been around for 30 years, we have been watching them, we have made our assessment, and we will bring them down. They must fall.
I imagine you realize that if what you say is true, according to the Ugandan government, that would be treason.
Of course, they can call it anything they want. And according to us, we are saying we are doing the right thing, because the country of Uganda, as was started by our forebearers, it was meant to be a country for all of us. But these kind of rules they are making are their own laws. So we simply don't agree that anybody can accuse us of anything when they are unfair in the first place to do the right thing.
How many of your leadership members are within the country?
I may not be at liberty to say how many, because we know the sensitivity of this question. What I can say is that we have very many people who are already in the country. They are there. I can't mention their identities for obvious reasons. Some of our other people are just living in the neighboring countries. Again, I can't mention the countries for obvious reasons. And then some of us, many of us, are living outside the country, doing mobilization, doing diplomatic work, and many other things, as you may know, because this is really a very, very important struggle in our lives.
You know that some other groups have tried in the past to do what you intend to do. Do you have the wherewithal, the resources, to pull off what you intend to do?
The question of resources often comes into play. And we are aware about the need to have so many resources in terms of human resources, in terms of material resources. But as I've said earlier, the first aspect of resources, namely the human resources, there is no question about that, because the population almost is behind us. The only thing we are doing now, right now, and why some of us are running from country to country, is to look for the material resources that we need for that work.
That was Joe Wakaima. He's the spokesperson of the group that calls itself the Super Coalition of the Fearless. He spoke with me from the Dutch capital, The Hague. Tension hangs around the fate of Zambia's top opposition leader, who faces treason charges and whose court appearance has been postponed repeatedly. On Friday, a magistrate referred the matter to the High Court, meaning the case will continue for the foreseeable future. If convicted, Hakainde Hichilema could be given the death penalty over an incident in which his convoy refused to yield to the president's motorcade. VOA's Anita Powell has more from Johannesburg.
What looked like an episode of road rage has grown into an international incident with life or death implications. For more than 6 weeks now, opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema has been in jail, awaiting trial on treason charges that carry a possible death sentence. His case has proceeded in fits and starts, says his spokesman Charles Kakoma, who spoke to VOA Friday outside the court after yet another delay.
Justice delayed is justice denied. There's no reason why this case should drag on all this time.
In April, the motorcade of President Edgar Lungu crossed paths with Hichilema's convoy on a country road in western Zambia. The two men have a bitter history. Hichilema has run unsuccessfully for president 5 times and challenged the legitimacy of his latest loss in 2016. Hichilema's drivers refused to yield to the motorcade. Days later, police stormed his upscale Lusaka home, sprayed tear gas, and hauled him away.
In fact, it was considered to be a traffic offense. And the best that could have happened was just to give him a fine for a traffic offense. But the traffic offense had been converted into a treason case, a non-bailable offense. And Kainde Hichilema remains in jail, which is very unfair.
On Thursday, the tension spilled over Zambia's borders when authorities deported Musi Maimane, the head of South Africa's top opposition Democratic Alliance, who was planning to attend Hichilema's trial. On Friday, protesters crowded around the Zambian High Commission in South Africa's capital, Pretoria. Zambian government spokesman Amos Chanda told VOA that Maimane's deportation was legitimate because the politician said he was trying to influence the court to release Hichilema, which Chanda says is contempt. Democratic Alliance spokesman Graham Charters says Hichilema's United Party for National Development is a sister party and that the Democratic Alliance opposes the treason charges.
This, in our view, is absolutely, it will not hold up in any court of law anywhere in the world. And this is the abuse of state resources, the abuse of state institutions, in order to stifle political dissent and to intimidate opposition.
Rights groups have also sounded the alarm about the situation and say they, too, are watching closely. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Meanwhile, Amnesty International has condemned the prosecution of Hichilema and called on the Zambian authorities to stop misusing the criminal justice system to target and harass the political opposition. Depros Muchena, Amnesty International's regional director for Southern Africa, said in a statement that the prosecution is part of a cynical ploy to silence all political opposition in Zambia. In other news, Africa loses an estimated $50 billion a year to illicit financial flows, leaving governments strapped for cash and dependent on development aid. Nigeria tops the list, followed by South Africa. For VOA Moki, Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaounde, where experts gathered this week to propose solutions to the problem.
Faison Winifred types entries for clients transferring money abroad at Investment Fund, a local financial institution in Cameroon's capital, Yaounde.
Whatever the source of your money, we don't know, but we welcome those who want to deposit money. Why then do you discourage the person by asking, where is your source of income from? So we encourage everybody who come to deposit money.
Is there any ceiling as to the amount clients can transfer or receive?
No. So we don't even care. There's no limit. Whatever amount you want to deposit, we like it.
Such uncontrolled transactions are common on the continent, says Rose Archer, Cameroon's Supreme State Audit Minister and Secretary General of the African Organization of Supreme Audit Institutions. She says Africa is hemorrhaging money because of the failure of countries to enact strong legislation to check money flows.
Les transgressions relatives aux activités commerciales.
Archer says smuggling and trafficking during illegal commercial activity constitute 65% of the financial hemorrhage, while criminal activities, which consist of using funds for illegal purposes, like financing organized crime and terrorism, come next with 30%. She says corruption and tax evasion accounts for the remaining 5% of the money lost. According to the United Nations High-Level Panel on Illicit Financial Flows, Africa loses a staggering $50 billion annually. The panel says that is approximately double the amount of official development assistance Africa receives. African tax and audit experts gathered in Yaounde said the worst offender is Nigeria, with an illicit outflow of $157 billion from 2003 to 2012. South Africa comes second, with $122 billion lost during that time period, and Egypt third, with $37 billion. Magagi Tanko works for the Supreme State Audit Office of Niger.
La transformation des flux financiers issus de la drogue.
He says in Central and West Africa, huge sums of money are transferred illegally and public coffers are impoverished. He says illegal financial flows from drug trafficking have spiraled. Tanko says exporters use under-invoicing so they can dodge taxes and bring in less foreign exchange, leaving the rest of their earnings in offshore accounts. Lagan Worth Executive Secretary of the African Tax Administration, says a regional approach is key.
Part of the defense mechanism that African governments must employ is to build strong tax legislation and tax policy systems, including tax agreements between countries, especially inter-African countries.
The experts resolved to work with the Stolen Assets Recovery Initiative, a joint effort by the World Bank and UN Office on Drugs and Crime, to recover funds, but said the process is long and cumbersome since many banks remain secretive about their transactions. They said many of the illicit financial flows also end up funneled through complex criminal rings, severely limiting the ability of law enforcement and tax authorities to trace offenders and eventually recover the money. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaounde.
And in Malawi, 3 years of El Nino-induced drought and flooding left half of the population dependent on food aid. But this year, the country is reporting a good maize harvest. However, the surplus in this staple crop is raising fresh problems for farmers. Lameka Masina reports for VOA from Blantyre.
Malawi's government banned the export of maize and maize products in 2015 amid food shortages. But now things are changing. Latest crop production estimates by the Ministry of Agriculture show that maize production will rise to 3.2 million tons, up from last year's 2.3 million tons. The surplus has already sent local selling prices tumbling. The Farmers Union of Malawi said in a statement that maize prices in the eastern region of Africa range from $300 to $700 per metric ton. Farmers say this is almost triple what local buyers offer. Felix Jumbe is a commercial maize farmer in central Malawi.
They should lift the exports for maize. That would unlock the prices that are too low at the moment. 50 kwacha or 30 kwacha per kg is equally stealing from farmers by the vendors.
The government says the food security situation remains uncertain and it will not lift the export ban on maize. Jumbe, who is also the chairperson for the Alliance for Commodity Trade in Eastern Southern Africa, says if anything, there is a need for a compromise via ADMARC, the National Grain Marketer, or NFRA, the National Food Reserve Agency.
I would suggest that the government should buy all the maize through ADMARC, through NRFA, at an export parity price, the same price that they would export. So the farmers will have the money, and then the government will have the stock.
The government says it does not have funds to do that. Joseph Manamfeka is Minister of Industry, Trade and Tourism.
And I'm sure you are aware also that in 2002, we were in a similar case where we had a surplus maize, and then we never kept. We sold the maize to Kenya. And then we ended up in a shortfall, and we were looking around to buy back the maize that we sold.
He says this time the government will have to assess the situation before allowing exports.
There are surveys that need to be done and establish how much we have. How much do we keep in the strategic reserves? And how much do we export? We have not reached that stage yet. So once we establish that we have enough, not only for this year, because people are just looking at this year, we'll be able to allow exports.
The executive director for the Blantyre-based research organization, Institute for Policy Interaction, Rafiki Hajat, says the government is right to be cautious. Hajat recommends the ban remain in place until the National Food Reserve has stocked at least a 2-year supply of maize.
We've got no guarantee that we will have rains next year. We haven't implemented our irrigation schemes as planned. So I am reminded of the dream that the Pharaoh had in Egypt of 7 years of plenty followed by 7 years of starvation.
The Farmers Union of Malawi warns that the low price farmers are currently fetching for their maize could leave them at risk of hunger and deepening poverty, as they will have to sell larger quantities of their harvest this year to make ends meet. Meanwhile, the government has deployed military in all border districts to enforce the export ban. Malawi's President Peter Mutharika made the order 2 months ago after police in northern Malawi impounded over 30 trucks loaded with maize intended for illegal exports to neighboring Tanzania. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, we shall have a Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. Yes, now it's time for our Saturday music spot. Yes, time to relax and enjoy great African music.
Okay. Yeah. Just gotta let the chords play.
And I ain't gonna lie, but I wasn't ready. Still, you took me by surprise. You wanna know if I will ever leave your side, but I will love you till the very day I die. Girl, I need you, I've been needing you like air. Don't know how I would survive without you there. I can scream it loud for the whole world to hear. And if they call me crazy, I don't care. You should know I won't go. That's the last thing you should worry about. Stay with me till eternity. And ask only one question: will people fall in love in heaven? In heaven. Hope we'll still be in love in heaven. Hey, in heaven. Do people fall in love in heaven? Until we're older and our hair is gray, when our bones are aching and memories start to fade. My love for you will always be the same. And if you don't mind, please carry my last name. To you I promise.
To you I promise.
To you I vow.
To you I vow.
I pledge forever. I'm starting now.
Starting now.
I was lost until you turned me back around.
Me
I
back
will
around.
Love you for as long as life allowed. You should know,
you should know,
I won't go,
I won't go.
That's the last thing you should worry about. Stay with me,
stay with me
till eternity.
Eternity.
And ask only one question: will we still be in love?
Still be in love.
I am lucky to have you, oh baby. Plenty boys, but you chose me, darling. There's nobody above you, oh love me. You're the only girl that I know. You're the only one that I know. I am lucky to have you, oh baby. Oh. Plenty boys, but you chose me, darling. You know, say I love you, girl. I'm not like the other boys with the toasty plenty girls. I deal with you 100% of you. Oh, Niyogi, Ekuro, Lano,
Ekuro, Lano.
Eba, take what's a lamb, yo.
Eyago, Lano.
Manji, what they like, oh, baby, yo. And your baby, yo.
I'm okay.
Love me now and forever, oh. My darling.
I'm okay.
Love me, go love it. Kulu kulu baby, if you vex me, I will not beat you. Kulu kulu sisi oh, remember say we supposed bond to. No do gra-gra, cause I love you. And if I want marry, not to marry you. Jenny viva viva viva
viva viva yeah.
Oh eh, me and the Shiva Shiva Shiva
Shiva yeah.
I don't they wonder wonder wonder. Just now your love oh, they give me the ginger ginger ginger. Chama, ask a kid onto a brother. Me and you together oh, no one put us under. Me and I go joke with you, go be leg over. I know go play for the fool, I swear with my two brothers. Baby, I go follow you. Waka waka, waka waka, catch green lady for your love, oh. Baby, me I never see no one,
no one,
oh.
No one, no one,
no one, no one be like you.
Kulu kulu, baby,
if you love me, I go love you too.
Kulu kulu, baby.
If you vex me, I will not beat you.
Kulu kulu sisi yeah.
Remember say we supposed bond to.
No do bla bla,
cause I love you. I want marry, not to marry you. Oh na, oh na, Bobo B.O.
Oh B.O. Ade
Big Smells up.
Shade, Oyana. O ti pe ti mo tin ba e so, o ti pe ti mo tin to si e o Shade. Ojo nlo, ose to lo mu pe ta ti Shade. I dey beg you say make you marry me, you tell me say you no ready oh the job. Omo ge da ngo temi jowo ma je kin lo ko mi ti o. I love you die, I need you die, baby mi jo, please come be my wife. Yen be lo le mommy mi le jo mo mar mi o baby. Baba, me raise your mind. You know I love you. Oh, mommy, why, baby? Answer me on time. I dey beg you say make you follow me. You tell me say you no love me. Oh the joy. Omo ge da tun se temi jo ma je kin lo ko mi ti o. I love you die, I need you die, baby me. Please come be my wife. Yen be lole, mommy me raise your mom. Marry me oh baby, baba me raise your mom. You know I love you, oh mommy wife. I love you, I'm gonna give you a family.
multiplier. I celebrate, I jubilate. No time to complain, why you no got time to complain? Yeah, I celebrate, I de jubilate. See, no time to complain, why you no got time to complain?
Pop some bottles and just feel okay. Everybody make you feel okay. Whoa, sexy ladies just they feel like they. Make sure you just got to feel okay.
They sweet me for my head, ooh. For my head, ooh. If you the best, now for your head, ooh. For your head, ooh. The thing you the plan, now for your head, ooh. Softly, softly, kill yourself. For my people, to make me the jubilate, ooh. Me, I they feel like I'm really good, ooh. I say, what am I? Me and my fans with the Burugawa. Yeah, ah, Chikwebuka. In my life, in Kenjika. Oh my God, I'm falling. Hey, I'm falling. Every day my phone is ringing. Hey, money is calling. Yeah. Every night and day, I swear I'm happy. How I got here today, me, I swear I'm happy. God, I beg for only one chance, and you give me plenty more chance. Oh my God, I only one chance, I the chance I make them to dance. Oh, oh,
make me take them suffering to celebrate you.
Celebrate you.
One in my corner, I'm one of my day, enter head, yo.
Enter head, yo.
Any work I you do now for your head, yo.
Where you go?
Mastercraft to the beach, they do the enter head, yo.
Every night and day, I swear I'm happy. How I got here today, me, I swear I'm happy.
God, I beg for only one chance, and you give me plenty more chance. I beg for only one chance, now the chance they make them to dance.
I celebrate, I jubilate. No time to complain, boy, you no got time to complain. Yeah, I de celebrate, I de jubilate. See, no time to complain, boy, you no got time to complain.
Pop some bottles and just feel okay. Everybody make you feel okay. Sexy ladies just they feel like you make sure you just got to feel okay.
The thing they sweet me for my head, ooh. For my head, ooh. If you the best, I'm on your head, ooh. For your head, ooh. The thing you the plan up on your head, ooh. Softly, softly, kill yourself. For my people, make me the jubilate, ooh. Me, I they feel like I'm really good, ooh.
If you carry chicken, let me for my head, yo. If you drink it, rosé, now for my head, yo, my head, yo. If you, now for my head, yo. But if you scatter this place, now for your head, yo. Every night and day, I swear I'm happy. How I got here today, me, I swear I'm happy. God, I beg for only one chance, and you give me plenty more chance. I beg for only one chance, now the chance they make them to dance. Pop some bottles and just feel okay. Everybody make you feel okay. Whoa. Sexy ladies just they feel like you. Make sure you just got to feel okay.
That was our Saturday Music Spot. I sincerely hope you enjoyed the music. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. From the Nightline Africa team, we thank you for joining us tonight. Peter Clotte will be back tomorrow. I'm Douglas Impoga, wishing you a very wonderful evening.
An editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. Africa, particularly sub-Saharan Africa, is on the rise. It has some of the world's fastest-growing economies and a young population that is eager to learn and work. Today, the continent commands significant investment from all over the world. But Africa's bright future is imperiled by transnational crime, said Senior Director for National Security and Diplomacy Anti-Crime Programs at the State Department's Bureau of International Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs, David Luna.
In particular, we must recognize that transnational regional illicit trafficking of drugs, arms, humans, and other illicit trade goods and services are fueling greater insecurity and instability across Africa and in other parts of the world.
We see increasing links between cross-border narcotics trafficking and other forms of transnational organized crime across Africa that imperil not only the rule of law, economic development efforts, the promotion of trade and investment, but helps to fuel greater instability and insecurity. The illegal economy accounts for 8 to 15% of the world gross domestic product, but in many developing countries, that figure is far higher. Enormous amounts of illicitly gained dollars are expanded by criminal organizations to corrupt government officials and security offices, helping criminal threat networks carve out an illicit trafficking corridor that stretches from the West African coast to the Horn of Africa, from North Africa south to the Gulf of Guinea, said David Luna. At a time when many are heralding the rise of some of the world's fastest-growing economies in sub-Saharan Africa, these criminal entrepreneurs are undermining that economic development and growth by financing flourishing illicit markets, turning many vulnerable communities into a corridor of insecurity and instability, and siphoning the real potential of the legitimate economy. The best way to combat illegal trade is through collective action at every level, local, regional, and global, to win our fight against convergence crime, said Mr. Luna. The United States will continue to enhance international cooperation with key partners to combat the lethal nexus of organized crime, illicit trade, corruption, and money laundering, and to protect communities from the violence, harm, and exploitation brought about by transnational networks. The U.S. will do this by enhancing its efforts to break their corruptive power, attacking their financial underpinnings, following the money and stripping them of their illicit wealth, and severing their access to the financial system.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.